This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From Variety, I'm Michael Schneider. That 70s show star Topher Grace, next seen in the National Geographic limited series The Hot Zone, remains in awe of Saturday Night Live and what the long-running series has meant for popular culture.
But I think there's something really powerful about having a show beyond that long and completely live. Yeah. It feels to me, I went to a boarding school and we had like an all-school meeting every week, which was like everyone, so the teachers and the staff and the students all came into this one hall that was at the school. And there were announcements and, you know, when nationally something had happened that was troublesome, you know, might be troublesome for the kids, you know, the teachers or the headmaster would talk about it. And I feel like we're really in need of that in our world, in our country. And I feel like there's something really special about Saturday Night Live and how it's been in the same place the whole time. I think a lot of this is the genius of Lorne Michaels.
On this edition of the podcast, we talk to Topher Grace about his favorite episode of TV ever, a 1991 Saturday Night Live edition hosted by Steve Martin. Plus, we talk about his recent dramatic turns in Black Klansman and The Hot Zone. And of course, whether there will ever be a That 70s Show reunion, it's my favorite episode.
Welcome to Variety's My Favorite Episode. Let's give it up for your host, Michael Schneider.
Thank you, as always, to DJ Omar Khan. It's My Favorite Episode, and this time out, we're talking to the Hot Zone star, Topher Grace. His pick for favorite episode is the Season 17 Saturday Night Live, hosted by Steve Martin, with musical guest James Taylor, which aired on December 14, 1991. The episode opens with a unique cold open as Martin and the cast sing Not Gonna Phone It In Tonight.
That's why I'm not gonna phone it in tonight. Not gonna read my screenplay during the songs tonight. I could walk through my parts and still be hilarious. I've done it so often before. But look at these faces, look at this fat guy. He wants more, he wants more.
Hey, I'm not that fat.
Please. So many times I faked it just because I could. I'm that good.
That good.
But 20% won't do tonight.
Mr. Martin, I'll do it for you tonight.
Not only is Grace an SNL superfan, he even got the opportunity to guest host an episode in 2005. We sat down with the actor recently to discuss his love of the show and the serendipity of working on That 70s Show under former SNL writers Bonnie and Terry Turner. Grace took his assignment seriously, stopping by the podcast studio with notes in hand. Well, you're the first person to actually come this prepared, so
Well, it's not a joke, right?
Yeah. Also, you're the first person to pick SNL and an SNL episode in particular.
Well, I think, weirdly, people... SNL is so... such a part of all of our lives, right? Most of us, since before we were born,
yeah,
that are watching it now. I think, like... there's a tendency to not think of it as a show. You think of it as like an institution or something. Like,
yeah, it's just always been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, well, you went back. You picked a show from, it was the Holiday 1991 episode. So this is going back to season 17.
Okay, so let me just start off by saying I did not, there's no perfect episode of SNL, right?
Right.
Like, first of all, there's always something wrong with it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some episode, and that's kind of the charm of it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's live. So... there's no way to kind of find which, and then, you know, every season means something different to everyone. Yeah. Especially where you are in your life.
Yeah, they always say the cast, your cast, is the one that you first were introduced to in high school. And that's always the one that you sort of feel most akin to.
With like, with science fiction writing, they say the golden era of science fiction writing is when you were 13.
Right, yeah. No, that totally makes sense. So
I feel that way about, okay, so I'm going to, so yes, this is when I was in high school or middle school.
Yeah.
It was when I was introduced to the show. So I am guilty of picking from that time. But it's like the two greatest cast. I mean, come on, this has to be the best time of that show.
Yeah, because you're right. It was sort of the collision of that late 80s cast of Dana Carvey and Mike Myers. Yeah. and
Phil Hartman.
Yeah, Phil Hartman and all those folks sort of colliding with the new cast.
The Sandler and Farley and Spade.
Yeah, Chris
cast.
Rock.
This is one of those few years where they're all there at one time.
Yeah.
And I picked it because it's the greatest host probably ever of the show, who's consistently to this day, you know, from the beginning, been the best host of that show.
Steve Martin, who you almost forget wasn't actually ever a cast member, but he was such a critical part of SNL, especially in its early days, that you just, like, assume that he was. Mm-hmm. So, and then it's a holiday episode. Those always feel a little more special. There's something about the energy is up. Everyone's sort of in a good mood, and there's a lot going on.
Yeah, and Bonnie and Terry Turner, who wrote on that show, were huge writers on that show, and then wrote Wayne's World and Tommy Boy, and were kind of the first ones to make a movie out of something on that show. And then they wrote Third Rock from the Sun, and they created That 70s Show.
Yeah, yeah.
And getting to know them, my backstory is really weird. It's that I wasn't an actor. I was in a high school play, and their daughter did the sets for it. This is in New Hampshire, at like a boarding school. And so I was just going to school with their daughter. I was aware that her parents wrote, you know, these are the greatest movies of the time. And not only was I obsessed with SNL, then it was like, you know, Wayne's World and Tommy Boy, I thought was just perfection.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There was that period of time where SNL, like, immediately was turning things into these fantastic movies.
And that's a great relationship from that show. You know, Spade and Farley, they're kind of total opposites, but they're friends. And so then I remember I was still at school. They won the Golden Globe for Third Rock from the Sun, which is kind of a genius concept. And then I got to know them really well when I was doing That 70s Show, and they told me about this episode, because I always thought this opening with Steve Martin, where he starts, they were writing, you know, this is a couple of years earlier, they were writing on it at the time. They told me how the whole group came together to write it. What maybe people know or don't know about Saturday Night Live is that the writers all write individual sketches.
Yeah.
So on Tuesday, there's like a, I don't know, some kind of writing session Tuesday night that goes until like 3 a.m.
Yeah, they basically sleep overnight in the office.
Yeah, I mean, it also sounds like the coolest. I'm sure they don't feel that way, but it sounds like you know, some kind of genius summer camp or something.
Yeah,
and then on Wednesday they present the host with all the, you know, 50, 60 sketches, and you read all of them. But it's individual work, like, or maybe some people team up. But I guess they told me that this was one where this whole staff, this kind of legendary staff, which has, you know, among others, like, you know, Bob Odenkirk and Conan O'Brien, and, you know, like, amazing.
I think Al Franken was there at the time.
Yeah, I mean, and it had people who were kind of new to the show, right? And then it had these voices that were still there from the 70s, right, when it started.
Yeah.
They all came together, apparently, to write this opening, which I think is, if you had to point to, like, one singular moment of the show, it's got to be, look, everyone could debate this, right, to the end. It's been on for 45 years or something.
Yeah.
But, like, Steve Martin being backstage and then doing this musical number, which is like just perfect.
Yeah, yeah. It's the kind of thing that they usually save for a monologue. But this was the actual opening before Live from New York at Saturday Night. And
all this history, because Steve Martin, I mean, at the time, the show probably felt old.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it had been on for so long. I guess it had been on 15 years at that time.
Yeah,
or less.
Like 17. It was season 17. So it was already sort of aged. And you know, Lorne Michaels had, you know, created it, the left, then came back. And it seemed like, okay, how much longer can this thing go?
Well, they clearly had all the success. I mean, to me, those kind of early Jan Hooks, Phil Hartman years are like unbelievably artistic. And I think Bonnie and Terry were there at that time.
Yeah.
And then this kind of new cast was coming in, so that was exciting. And
yeah,
it all comes together in this one sketch, which is just, And it's about SNL itself, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And everyone had a part. Everyone had a line. And, of course, they even have Lorne sitting there. And I love someone's, like, painting a portrait of Lorne as he's sitting
that
there.
Joke is, so there are, like, 12 amazing jokes that happen in one thing. Yeah. One of them is Lauren's section where he's like lip syncing to that thing.
Yeah, yeah. As someone's painting like this amazing portrait of him in his throne.
To me, what also it highlights is that in a way, SNL is kind of a sitcom. Like it is individual sketches and there is like a host. Although I hosted, and it actually feels like you're more of a guest star because these people are so. Can you curse on this?
Yeah, yeah.
They're so fucking talented. I mean, like, you go, you're just kind of like guest starring on this show that they're putting on, but you get to know the characters, and I could tell you the characters now are like Pete Davidson's a character and like Leslie Jones is a character in the same way, like, yeah. What this sketch did is it like has Chris Farley as his character, right? I mean, he plays characters within the show, but then I thought what was so cool is that it kind of like Phil Hartman comes out and comments on what Phil Hartman does on the show, and you realize like one of the great things about that show is you get to know who Dana Carvey is. Even though he's playing all these different characters, you also start to, you know who Will Ferrell is. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're like, yeah. Well, yeah, another good example is Tim Meadows comes out and says, this is the only line I have this week on this episode. But that was when he had just joined, and then he ended up being there for like, 12 years. He was one of the longest running cast members. But from those early days where the newbies barely, they're fighting to get in and to have even one line or one sketch.
I just love the fact that they are different characters, but then within that they are like, it was great on 30 Rock, they had this great, Tracy Jordan character. It's kind of like that. Like Tracy Jordan is a character, and then he also plays characters on this fictional show they're on. But like, I always like the fact that you get to know and feel comfortable with these performers as who they are kind of off camera too.
Yeah.
And I think this sketch does that perfectly too.
Yeah, yeah. No, and even Steve Martin, of course, being Steve Martin. And
Steve Martin, outside of this, is one of the great American, multi-hyphenate geniuses of all time. And then to have to let him come on this thing, which he's really comfortable with, and write something that's so perfectly him. I mean, there's too much going on in one. To rewatch this for you, which was amazing, to sit there. I was on a plane ride, and they had internet, so I said, all right, I'm going to watch this whole episode.
Yeah.
And just, I couldn't get over how perfect that opening is.
Yeah, yeah. And then, various sketches that were in that episode.
Yeah,
Schmitz Gay, one of the classic ads.
Great. And at that time, if someone were to go back and watch that now, they would not understand what was so powerful about that at the time. But it was not something that was on TV.
Yeah.
And it's funny, but it's also important.
Yeah, yeah. So that was great. There was quite a few Deep Thoughts. Remember Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy?
I love Deep Thoughts. My high school yearbook page, they give the seniors a page, and mine was a Deep Thought.
Yeah.
Which I'm trying to remember. Was like, if trees screamed, would we be so cavalier about cutting them down? Perhaps if they screamed all the time for no good reason.
Yeah, it was just nonsense. And I remember, like, a friend and I did a college radio show, and we even like stole that bit, because that's what you do in college.
You stole
that bit. So we
exactly
did our
what
own,
I was doing in my yearbook. Yeah. Everyone's stealing, like, also there was no internet at the time.
Yeah.
This is actually to say, I love this episode and there's so much going on and I love Saturday Night Live. I think everyone comments on how it goes up and down, but truly it's always relevant. There's always something to take from it. I think what's so important about Saturday Night Live, no matter what your favorite, substitute for this episode, whatever your favorite episode is. But I think there's something really powerful about having a show beyond that long and completely live.
Yeah.
It feels to me, I went to a boarding school and we had like an all school meeting every week, which was like everyone, so the teachers and the staff and the students all came into this one hall that was at the school, and there were announcements and when nationally something had happened that was troublesome, might be troublesome for the kids, the teachers or the headmaster would talk about it. And I feel like we're really in need of that in our world, in our country. And I feel like there's something really special about Saturday Night Live and how it's been in the same place the whole time.
Yeah.
I think a lot of this is the genius of Lorne Michaels, which is that show's so successful, he could have moved it.
Yeah.
He could have put it in a bigger studio. I've been there. It's hard for them to bring the sets up in the elevators. I mean, there's something so small about that studio space. I don't think people realize at home it's hard to make things look great, and that's kind of like the point of it. Like, yeah, he gives it this live, tactile quality that has captured, you know, the last 4.5 decades or something, has captured what America is kind of going through, and
yeah,
feels like it's so immediate. There's nothing else like that.
Yeah, and I think even more so now in this age of fragmentation, and people have so much choice, and they can watch things on demand at any time they want. So other than Game of Thrones, people aren't watching the same thing at the same time anymore, yeah, except for sports and SNL.
Well, it's these kind of live events where anything can happen, and I'm sure there's a danger to it that Lauren must understand is like a really watchable quality.
Yeah.
And when things go wrong, I mean, I don't think he's happy when things go wrong, but in a way, the challenge he's set up for himself by never changing that where it is and where, I mean, I'm so nervous. I really mean this, and I mean, I don't know him well, but I'm really nervous that if he's not a part of that show, that America won't have that home base.
Yeah.
Not to sound too, sappy about it or something, but I really think that that's an important touchstone that we all, by the way, when they did like remember when the Apprentice was like really popular?
Yeah.
This is probably not like so great to bring up now, but like when the Apprentice was a real, it was having a moment. It was its first season, like everyone was watching. Its finale was at the studios at SNL.
Yeah.
Like, I remember after 9/11 when people wanted to talk about it, like Mayor Giuliani was in the opening monologue. Like, I think there's just something about such a scary world. There's no center of it, right? No center of town.
Yeah, yeah. But this is like something you can count on, that it's going to be there.
Yeah, and that has to do with, I think it's been there for a long time, so the amount of time it's been on.
Yeah.
And then I also think it has to do with the balls that it takes to keep it the same. I mean, everything else. I've been a part of things like this. For this, they grow successful, they grow bigger and kind of out of control, and they can't keep it the same.
Yeah.
Success has many fathers, right? And like Lauren, I think he's really an American legend. Like, to kind of, and the reason it's done well is because he's. I think another thing is, like, he always puts the music act before update. Like, I think that's something that the network's probably always saying, if I had to guess, like, why don't we get update a little earlier? And he knows just, like, how people, what keeps them tuned in.
Yeah.
And, if he weren't there, well, I just hope.
Yeah.
Hope Tina Fey takes over.
Exactly. No, and the years that he wasn't there, the show almost was canceled. So it took him coming back to save SNL.
Well, yeah, you can see what it was like without him.
But, yeah. Well, you mentioned it, but yet you guest hosted in 2005. Mm-hmm. Now, that was an interesting sort of, you had to pinch hit, right? Wasn't Jennifer Garner originally going to host?
Right, I found out very quickly that I was going to host it, and it was...
So how did that happen? Like,
well, you know, you get the call, and... It's one of those great calls in your life. And for anyone out there who hasn't hosted yet, who's listening, this is the experience. You are, especially if you're 25 or 26, you're scared out of your mind. And you go through this process everyone's kind of talked about, where they read you the sketches. And to me, the moment that really stands out is, I always thought people were coming out of like when they come out that door and they run down the steps and give their monologue.
Yeah.
I always thought that there was like a room behind that door that everyone was hanging out in. I just always thought, like,
the cool green room.
Yeah, that was the cool green room backstage, and everyone's in there. They go, hey, it's your time to go out there. Like, that studio is so small. There's no room back there. There's just like a brick wall, and then 2 feet in front of it is a set door, and you run through it. And the band is live, and, you know, the show is live. And I think I made the mistake of asking, you know, has anyone ever tripped when they came out for the monologue? And they said, no, not yet, you know.
Shit. Someone's got to be the first.
Yeah, exactly. So I was standing behind that door, and the band is so loud. And they have a dress rehearsal, but nothing can compare you for how nervous you're going to be.
Yeah.
And there's just kind of a grip who's sitting on a bucket or something, like reading a newspaper, and he looks up at you and he says, like, 3, 2. You can't even hear him. The band is so loud.
Yeah.
And he points at you and you got to run out there. And
yeah.
It was a really crazy experience.
Yeah.
But although I really loved doing it, and a lot of hosts I know, even now, say, you know, this is a dream of my life, and it certainly was for me. Like, I focus more on my experience as a viewer of it, because I think it's, I don't know what else.
Have you gone back and watched your episode? Or?
Yeah, every night before I go to sleep.
Because you also love The Killers, and they were your musical
guests.
No,
I fast forward through anything I'm not in.
Exactly.
But I think, I really love my time being there and hosting. I don't, it's funny, they said, like, kind of what accents do you do at the beginning of the week? And I went, uh-oh, I might not be the optimal host for this. I don't really do any characters or anything. But just being there and the history of it is great. But I the older I've gotten, the more I appreciate. I mean, I was excited in a self-centered way that I was on it when I went to do it. But now seeing it in more context, I go, what a wonderful thing that is for. I mean, that show came on, I guess, 2 years before I was born. And, you know, it's funny. I love doing it, but the more impactful thing was the first episode I saw in sixth grade.
Yeah.
Remember, we got home late from something. My mom let me watch it, and it blew my mind.
Yeah, it kind of informs your humor to some degree. Like, it sort of helps you define
degree.
When you're that age.
To every degree.
Yeah.
It's like, look, everyone's got stories before. I'm sure when Lorne Michaels watched Flying Circus or something, he went like, whoa, what is that? You know, so there's, every generation has its thing, but it's crazy is how this is sustained. And now the show has people on it who grew up on it.
Yeah, yeah. When you did it, that was toward the end of run of 70s show, right? So
yeah.
Yeah. So, to some degree, did you feel more confident at that point? Did you sort of feel, I got this, or was it still just terrifying? You've been performing in front of huge studio audiences for several years at that point.
Yeah, I felt comfortable. Just to be clear, anyone's tuning in, I did not pick my episode of SNL. like we're kind of...
But it's fascinating to talk to someone who lived through that experience.
I always, even now, I'm doing Jon Stewart's new movie right now. And, you know, it's a real comedy. But it's when Steve Carell's in it, Jon Stewart's directing it. And you really want to come... comedy ready. You know what I mean? You don't want to overdo it. You don't want to undercook it. It's like I really respect the people on the set. So I would say having a live studio audience for years on 70s Show was the greatest training ground for all of that. I mean, it helped on SNL because there's a live audience. But to me, sometimes where it really helps is when there's not a live audience.
Yeah.
It's a movie I'm doing now where you want to know what you think people will be laughing at in 9 months once it's edited. And in theaters, and you don't want to be too, you want to be really careful with the volume switch, you know?
Yeah.
The volume knob.
In a moment, Topher Grace on what it took to play David Duke in Black Klansman, the real life warning behind the Hot Zone, and whether a That 70s Show reunion might ever happen. From Variety, this is My Favorite Episode.
This is Daniel Holloway. Join me every Friday for TV Take, Variety's podcast about the television business. In every episode, we feature interviews with stars and showrunners from today's hit shows, as well as conversations with Variety journalists about the key TV headlines of the day. Subscribe or download to TV Take wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. It's My Favorite Episode. I'm Michael Schneider, and Topher Grace is our guest. National Geographic's The Hot Zone is based on the book that chronicled the terrifying true story of the origins of the Ebola virus and its first arrival on U.S. soil.
Ebola's never been detected on U.S. soil.
There's a first time for everything. I have a husband, 2 kids. We have a duty to protect them.
Oh, my God.
I need to get back in there.
There's a chance that it's Ebola.
They may already be in the midst of an outbreak.
The 6-episode miniseries stars Juliana Margulies and Noah Emmerich, as well as Topher Grace, who plays Dr. Peter Jarling, virologist for the United States Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases. Audiences may still remember Grace for his 8-season run as Eric Foreman on That 70s Show, but he's done a wide variety of projects since then, including his recent role as David Duke in Spike Lee's Black Klansman, and now in the Nat Geo thriller The Hot Zone, which is most definitely not a comedy.
Well, let's talk about, I mean, you've made some interesting career choices recently. It sort of runs the gamut. So right now you're shooting a comedy film, Hot Zone, of course, coming out in late May. A thriller, real life.
Hot Zone is not a comedy.
Not a comedy. It's.
Although, dude, I love doing comedy in things that are dramatic. That is actually probably my sweet spot.
Jumping around real quick, I mean, your take on David Duke in Black Klansman. I mean, it's, you know, such an awful, awful human being, but, you know, pathetic, and you're able to kind of channel a little bit of that.
Well, you can say a lot with comedy that you can't say without it, you know, and I was really lucky that script was as funny as it was. Spike hated using the word comedy. I think he liked using the word humorous because the conceit of that film is so hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, just when someone tells you about it, you go, it has to be a real story or it would be like the weirdest made up thing ever. But there was a really interesting tone there too, and I was very very scared doing it.
Yeah. But I mean that finished product. I mean, that movie, I don't think I've ever gone from laughing to that final scene. Yeah. I mean, I was bawling in the theater.
A lot of people were. You know, it was it ran the gamut for me preparing it, too, because the rehearsal, the research part, the rehearsal was okay because I was doing it with Adam and John David, and I realized, oh, there's a tone to this movie that's going to be fun is the wrong word, but it's going to be making fun of it with a really kind of dark comedy.
Yeah.
But in terms of the research, it was like borderline depressing. So it kind of went backwards. If your experience was that you had fun and then it was depressing, mine was that it was very depressing. I had to read his autobiography, which is like his Mein Kampf. I had to watch a lot of filmed interviews. I watched a lot of him on Donahue,
yeah,
which was really interesting and how he interacted with the crowd. And so it was kind of the worst month of my life. And then once we started making it, I thought, oh, this is like, you know what it is when you add a little bit of humor, you go, this is going to be really seductive. If you make it all serious, it might turn some people off, but you might, with some humor, you might talk to some people who wouldn't normally listen,
yeah,
which is really important with a film like that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And to be, I mean, it's subtle because I like describing him as pathetic, because that's sort of the best way to kind of depict David Duke, is to, you know, not beat people over the head, but just sort of subtly show people like this is just a pathetic human being.
Well, that's why you got to work with someone like Spike Lee, is because in the wrong hands, it's a very dangerous film. I mean, to want to have fun with that subject matter is very scary for a performer. But I knew reading it that it was going to be Spike from the beginning. So and Jordan Peele was producing it, so I thought, this might be the only two people in the world that you can kind of trust with that kind of material.
Yeah, yeah. Now, compare what was your prep situation like for Hot Zone? You're playing another sort of real-life character and another real-life situation.
Also not the greatest prep time. You know, that book is really depressing, and the message of that book and our limited series is that it happened. It reached American soil. Ebola was here, and it can come back. It's like, you know, my wife hates when I talk about this, but the fact that we haven't had a big earthquake in a while does not mean that we're more safe now.
Right.
It means that we're actually, you know, inside you internalize it as like, oh, you feel more and more safe. You should actually feel more scared. And some of the things we learned doing our research for that, because it wasn't just reading the book, it was then meeting with people who worked at the CDC, and we had experts on the set. And you start washing your hands all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all I did. And the other thing is these scientists don't touch their face. They go through whole flu seasons without getting the flu because how many times have I touched my face in this interview right now?
Right.
And they know how to not be contagious. But
yeah.
That happened in the 80s. We are way overdue.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah.
So it sounds like this comedy you're shooting right now is a nice sort of bath after all this darkness.
It's been great. It's been really like, look, it's political. I mean, John wrote it, and it's it has some real truths that are very serious at its core. But like everything John does, it's sugar-coated so deliciously.
Yeah. What can you talk about it? Like, what do you can you say who you're playing?
You know, I don't know how much I can say about it. Probably not. Yeah. The cast is insane. It's Rose Byrne and Steve Carell and Chris Cooper, and I mean, just incredible actors and people who are both great actors and great comedians.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've been having a time. I mean, to work with some really.
But you're
great
right.
People.
This like I'm relaxing so much on set to go from Hot Zone where I was. First of all, some of those lines. I'm just an actor, man. Like,
this is like the classic. You gotta because you're playing a researcher and all the technical terms, all the things you have
and
to learn.
You're next to Juliana Margulies, who like, you know, knows her shit when it comes to like, you know. I mean, this isn't the ER, but it's like she knows how to do
but
that.
She
thing.
Yeah, she's practiced. Yeah.
So I really wanted to come correct, but that subject matter, even though you know, Noah Emmerich, who's in it too, and Juliana Margulies, they're really fun. And sometimes you weirdly have more fun on one of those dramas than on a comedy because you need to let off steam.
Yeah, got to have some dark humor on set.
Yeah, so we did have a lot of fun, but ultimately it's the message is so, scary. I mean, the monster is real. This isn't a fictional monster we're making the movie about, and it's invisible, the monster. I mean, that's what's so scary. And it's been really fun being on a set where we're just, like, laughing all the time. And
I've needed to scratch my nose for the past like 2 minutes now ever since you mentioned that. I just don't know what to do.
Yeah, you're getting the flu anyway, man.
Exactly. We're all screwed. Yeah. If it's not one thing, it's another. You know, it's funny this day and age. I feel like I have to ask the question because if I don't, then it's going to be announced in a month and I'll be kicking myself. But you know the classic, like, 70s show reboot. You guys ever talk about it? Is that ever?
You know,
come
don't
up?
Worry. It doesn't. You're not. You're not the first person to ask.
Of course, I'm not.
And you won't
and
be
I won't
last.
Be the last. But just got to get it for the record.
No, I get it because I was. It's funny. It's a question you get asked a lot. But then I was in a scene the other day with Steve Carell, and I was like, well, I bet he gets asked it like a lot more. Like,
yeah, it's a required question now.
I think, and it is because most of the shows have done it. But I think the short answer is everyone's so successful who's come off that show. It'd be really, really hard. Like, Laura's on Orange is the New Black and Wilmer's on NCIS and, you know.
These
I
days
don't know what happened
to
Ashton and Mila, who knows.
But exactly. Like, but these days you can do three or four things at once, though.
I know. But the personal answer is I would love it because think about if someone said, we'll pay you to get to go do another year of high school with all your friends from high school, it'd be amazing. I mean, and you wouldn't have to do any schoolwork. It would all be fun. You know, like that's, God, I would love it. And I love it when I see any members of that cast individually or, sometimes we all get together. But I just think, look, I'd be there. I wouldn't be the one who held out.
I think one thing I've wanted to ask you, actually, because I don't think we talk about this enough in the world, is how weird was it that Fox had two characters named Eric Foreman on their network at the same time?
It was soul-shattering to me. It destroyed me.
Because you were the first.
I couldn't sleep for a long time. And only now, through like therapy and drugs, basically, have I kind of started to deal with that.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever like run into David Shore, who created House? You're like, dude, did you not watch
the
70s show? Like,
grabbed him by the lapels, I threw him up against the wall, and I said, "You son of a bitch!"
Yeah, this name was
first
taken.
Of all. By the way, first of all, 70s show came out first.
Yeah, years before.
I just started wailing on him. They had to get two of the waiters to kind of pull me off of him.
Yeah, yeah. That or like some like current executive at Fox would have said, "We can't do that." It's,
I mean, just think, guys, think. No, I actually didn't know about it until I think after 70 Show ended. I wasn't. I liked House, but I was one of those people who caught on to it later.
Yeah.
I played I was in a movie at that time with someone who was named Foreman at the, and it was throwing me, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty common name. I think literally the point, I remember I was there when Bonnie Turner, that writer we were talking about, was naming all the characters. And they all had different names when it was originally written, I think. And she, you know, they had to clear people's names and, you know, to make sure there wasn't only one person. You know, there has to be like 12 people that have the name or something.
Yeah.
And like, I think, you know, something like 14 people had the name, you know, Michael Kelso or something. And like 3 billion people had the name Eric Foreman. It was like she was going for what is the, both literally and figuratively, the most average common guy name, because that's like the spirit of his character.
Yeah.
It's literally a foreman, you know, I mean, like.
Yeah.
So
that made it easier to clear.
Yeah.
Well, fingers crossed, you know, maybe, you know, Netflix these days, they back up that Brinks trucks for everything. So Ashton's already on Netflix. Who knows?
Hey, man, I appreciate it. I mean, I like I said, I really mean it. Like, I would love to. Who wouldn't want to go back into, you know, what they were doing at, you know, 1920? It was it's the golden time of your life. And I love those guys. And you know what I really miss is working with them in front of a crowd. Like, I, you know, 4 days a week, we'd hang out and rehearse the thing, and that was really fun. And we'd all hang out afterwards, too. So it was like, you know, that was great. It's like being in high school. But then on that fifth day, we'd all get in front of an audience. And not only are those kids all so talented, but they're also so talented at what, you know, it's like a great sports team where one guy's a great catcher and one guy's a great pitcher and one guy's a great outfielder. My sports analogies aren't good for me. I don't play any sports. But, like, you know, I really miss knowing a team that well. Like, the thing I'm working on now, I you know, everyone's so talented, but I'm learning to know them. There, it's like you had 5 years of knowing what everyone's skill was. So if you wanted to throw to Wilmer, you knew there was a thing that he just knocked the cover off the ball. Or,
yeah, know. Yeah. Well, the other scary thing is it's been, what, 22 years, I want to say, since the show launched?
Hey, so, 20 years, dude. Relaxed. Only 20 years.
Right.
By the way, I had Wilmer. I have a podcast apropos of...
Oh, everyone has a podcast.
Everyone has
now,
a
right?
podcast. If you have a podcast, that's it.
Exactly.
You're the last person. No, but I had him on my podcast. It's called Minor Adventures. And each episode, we go on a different adventure. So the first episode, like, Whitney Cummings came on. We did a lie detector test. The second episode, Paul Scheer came on. And we did telemarketing. Every time it's different. I just took the Myers-Briggs test with Chelsea Peretti. When does this go out? This episode?
A couple weeks.
Oh, a couple weeks. Yeah. All right. So we just had – this is a secret now as we're recording it.
Yeah.
But it just happened. Zach Levi and I came in and we became ministers and we married a couple.
Oh.
So on the air. So Wilmer came in, and something we used to do all the time was fake movie trailers. Just while we were bored. There's a lot of hanging around time on a set. So Wilmer and I – we'd be playing music back in our dressing rooms, and we'd say, like, this summer, we'd start acting out trailers. So we had in, on my podcast, the biggest movie trailer announcer in the world, the guy who actually says, like, you know, in a world.
Yeah.
And me and Wilmer did movie trailer announcements with him. And so anyway, it was a great flashback to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It was like, it'll always be there, that kernel of, like, even just doing that with him on that, for that half hour was like... I was like, oh man, you can just, it's like riding a bike. You can just, these people that you're so close with, you can just pick it right back up and do it again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, fingers crossed. Congrats on everything that you've got going on, including the podcast, the upcoming movie, Hot Zone, coming to Nat Geo at the end of May. And who knows what else? Anything else you're excited about you can talk about?
Well, no, that's too much.
That's
already.
A lot. That is exactly. A lot already. So, and well, congrats, man, and thanks for coming
by. It's
great
coming on and geeking out about something that I truly care about.
Yeah, yeah. Did we miss anything from your notes, by the way?
No, look, we wound up. Everyone who comes on this show, who's your guest, winds up coming to Hollywood because it's something they saw when they were younger, right?
Yeah.
So that's the full circleness of it. You get to come on and say you're a fan, but hopefully it's something that they saw in their youth where they said, like, wait, I can do that. And that's why they're here talking to you now, right?
And here we go. So full circle. Well, congrats, man. Thanks a lot for coming by.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And that's it for this edition of My Favorite Episode. Join us again next time as we once again explore another guest pick. And be sure to subscribe to My Favorite Episode on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com for your daily fix of TV news, analysis, and reviews. I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you again next time.